Wednesday, everybody. This is Maria Vasquez Boyd, and you're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. And this is Art Speak Radio, yay, every Wednesday, noon to 1, here at the Little Old Station at 39th and Main. So thanks for tuning in today. I want to remind you, there is a full green corn moon of August, and that is best seen tonight. Through Thursday morning. It's also known as the full sturgeon moon, and Native Americans feel that this is when the corn is fully ready grown, but it's not ready to be harvested, or that the sturgeons are plentiful in the rivers and lakes in August. So, yeah, keep a lookout for that full green corn moon. I love it. You know? But, you know, I should also mention the meteor showers will be kind of in the way. As well, they'll all be crowded in the sky together, so take a look at that. This, and now, turning to other things, we have Larissa Uretti and Austin Modrell and Megan Papavilo here in the studio today to talk about art and music and poetry and all sorts of things. So we're going to start off with Megan, and she's a photographer that was transplanted to Kansas City from San Diego, California. She works with pictures, humor, zines, books, writing, performance, the internet, collaboration, and education to grow the democratic potential of photography. So I'm going to say welcome, my friend. You're on.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You bet. You know, I was kind of tooling around in the drugstore last week. There was a I think one of the last exhibitions there at the drugstore, because we all know that it's closing and it's that building has been sold. It was run through the Redeemer Fellowship Church,
right,
I believe.
Right.
And unfortunately, although it's been in use for the student, for artists in that as studio space, it's closing down. Building's been sold, and so people are sort of looking for other spaces. And I just want to talk to you just briefly about that, about your input, about your opinion about what's happening with that, and how will that affect you?
Yeah, so first I think that I'm not sure that the building itself has sold, but I know that it's being put up for sale. So that was enough of a reason for us to have to move out of the space so that they can show the building, sell the building. So I think for me and a lot of artists in there, it's not so much that we can't squeeze ourselves into a closet, a basement, a room in our house somewhere else.
We've all done that.
Right. Yeah. It's more that we're really losing that community that's there at Westport and Main Street, which has been a place for exhibitions, like the one that brought you into us, mm-hmm. A place for fundraisers, for nonprofits like Charlotte Street, for the local schools down the street, for other DIY arts organizations like Front Space in the Crossroads holds their annual fundraiser there and brings thousands of people through the door and into mm-hmm. that space. And that's going to be a big hole for us in the arts community, I think.
You know, and I feel that the location in the building itself has just been very accessible for so many people. You know, you see something going on out front and you don't know what it is because there's crowds of people trying to get in or exiting or whatever, food trucks and whatnot. But I think it's got great visibility for artists. And again, you've got that community of artists supporting each other and sort of, you know, it reminds me of the studio space at the Art Institute, mm-hmm. you know, and you do have that camaraderie.
Yeah, so it's existed for about 7 years. Mm-hmm. So in that time, some artists have come and went, and a couple artists have been there since the very beginning. So aside from those events and the opportunity to have access to that front space, the gallery space, that location to hold events. We also do critiques together. We also have meetings and share meals together. So it's just been a place to form community beyond mm-hmm. Kind of being siloed in our lone visual art practices.
Now, do you feel that because this works so well and you know, it really fostered this relationship with other artists, is there talk about other locations that this might be replicated at?
Yeah, so the difficult thing for us is we were kind of given 3 months to go from artists who are looking for affordable studio space to artists responsible for maybe running something like a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. And not a lot of us are prepared to do that labor overnight.
You and I talked about that, and there is a lot of work that goes with that. You know, I was actually a part of a non-for-profit group that formed back in 2006, and it takes a lot. It's very taxing, and for me, the numbers and all of that.
And a lot of us in there, like, we're not just artists, especially in that emerging artist category. Yeah. A lot of that means that. That's not our primary source of income. So right. We are also educators. Like, we are also parents. Like, we are also all of those things. We have lives.
But, you know, the upside of being a not-for-profit, that then you're eligible for a lot of sort of opportunities for grants and, you know, income that... resources that you wouldn't have otherwise.
Right, so and that's something that the city has kind of expressed to us, that, you know, there's really not a whole lot we can do unless we can connect you to those resources for nonprofits.
Yeah, and we're going to switch gears because I want to also mention that Megan teaches at the Art Institute.
Right? I will, yeah. I just taught the summer class with high school students for photography through PCAL, which is like a really exciting class, or a really exciting program that brings really motivated kids from all over to Kansas City, to the Kansas City Art Institute. Mm-hmm. In the fall, I'll be starting as a instructor for the juniors in photography. So every junior in photography will be my student.
Do they still have the labs of photography labs in there with the chemicals, the dark room, and all that, or has it changed? Because it's been a while since I've
Yeah. I think it's more like in the sophomore year, you get that time to experiment and kind of learn like those foundational kind of processes in photography for sure.
Did you go through that yourself?
I did not. So I transferred from San Diego and finished my BFA at the Kansas City Art Institute. But what I'm excited about getting to teach juniors is it's all self-directed. So it's very much like, what are you trying to say? What are you working on? And I'm really excited to be a part of that.
So you're just sort of helping them to get to where they want to be. They have that direction, and you just sort of guide them.
Yes, yeah. Good. We get to talk about ideas, which I'm super excited about.
Fantastic. I also want to mention that in 2018, Megan was commissioned through the Swiss Institute, and in 2019 won the Charlotte Street Foundation's Visual Artist Award. So congratulations
to you
for that. So what does that mean for you? What happens now that you've won the award?
Yeah, so the award this year has really given me more time to be in the studio because, like I said, it's like we all have jobs outside of this, sometimes five jobs outside of this. So, being able to afford to set aside the time to work in the studio, to work on the show, which this year is going to be in the Kemper. So that's really exciting. So the three winners will have an exhibition inside of the Kemper Museum.
And that will be of your work.
Yeah, yes. So it's me and two other visual artists, and there's also performing artists involved, too. But I will have work in the galleries there at the Kemper.
Now, you've also created the local and traveling exhibitions, public events, and publication projects, right? Centered on photography with Archive Collective?
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so Archive Collective sort of started as something like a student group while I was on campus at KCAI. And it started as a way not only to like work with each other and make opportunities for each other off campus, but also to connect to recent graduates and people like that that we may not have had access to outside of organizing events like that. And we started that in 2013. In 2016, we had a residency through Charlotte Street. And then in 2017, we were in the back of Front Space, a gallery in the Crossroads, making events happen.
Can you talk about that briefly? Because, you know, again, looking at your website, and you can share that with our listeners.
Sure.
Which is?
It's meganpapavilo.com, and that name is M-E-G-A-N-P-O-B-Y-W-A-J-L-O.
You know, I actually Googled that last name to try to impress you with how I can pronounce it, and there was nothing. I'm sorry. There were times I had to come up and say, hey, Megan. So, so if you would talk about that, the front space a little bit, because that was, really wasn't that long ago.
No, it wasn't. So front space has been around for several years and has kind of changed hands. So it's a little bit of like a legacy of a DIY space in the Crossroads, which is really cool. So right now it's run by two women of color, and they have opened up the backspace to be small studio spaces for a few artists. So a few artists have come in and out of those studios behind there. At one point, it was an apartment. At one point, like five or six people lived there together to kind of offset the rent,
right,
and make that more sustainable over there.
But your work did gain a lot of attention.
Yeah, so last year I had a show. So this was following that kind of residency that I had in the back of the space. I had a lot of time to think about how the quirks of that space kind of work, because it's a little tiny storefront in the Crossroads. It's glass windows and a curved wall with ice block bricks in it. So it's like, how does a 2D artist approach that space? So
that's a real challenge.
So my show was to think about the space more like a book than like a gallery. So I'm using the windows of the space like the spread of a book. And I made 5-foot pictures for the windows, and text on the walls to kind of talk about the way books function. And inside of the gallery, I had food that I was growing and plants and folding books and poetry.
And there's probably some images of that on your website, too,
yeah,
right? Yeah. You know, and if I'm not mistaken, Front Space is going away, too, because
yes,
of, again, of the what's happening in the Crossroads. You know,
yeah. Yeah, they unfortunately are losing their space and looking for space as well.
You know, I think that there's, it also, you know, with this loss, there's also an opportunity to reemerge in some place that maybe is even a better place, or you know, it's something new to begin and develop. I know East Crossroads, we've got Bunker Center for the Arts, and then also what's happening on along 31st and Gillum. There's a lot of shops opening up there, and studio spaces, too.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
Yeah.
And of course, that leads up to Troost as well.
Yeah, I think all of those have kind of been thrown out for options. So, like, while as we're looking for a space as the drugstore, as Front Space is looking for a space as Front Space, we're kind of having to get creative about how we can work together, or how we can split into several spaces, because, you know, honestly, we don't have the access to the financial, to the capital itself, to get us all under one roof again.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that that's going to happen in the near future for us.
Yeah. If you just tuned in to Art Speak Radio, I'm talking to Megan Papavilo, and we're talking about art and studio spaces, and some of the work that she's exhibited around the country and here in Kansas City. Megan is a photographer from San Diego, and were you brought here to specifically to go to the Art Institute?
Yeah, to finish my degree here.
Yeah. But you also work with pictures, humor, zines, books, writing, performance, the internet, collaboration, and education to grow the democratic potential of photography. In the years that you've been a photographer, what are some changes that you see, or have you seen any major shifts in photography?
Yeah, for myself, I think it surprises a lot of people that I finished my bachelor's degree with a point-and-shoot camera, and if smartphone cameras were that capability that they are now, I probably would have used that, because that's a tool that I had access to. I could afford to take a photography class before I could afford to take a painting class, because oil paint costs so much money. So just those questions
and
of access.
And
that's what initially brought me into photography. And I think is the most exciting thing about photography, rather than the most threatening thing that I think people think about what that's doing to the world of photography. I think that's actually the most exciting part, is that increased accessibility.
Yeah. You know, for me, the shift has been that you're not really in the dark room. I was, when I was going to UMKC, and I was on a school work program. And so I would be the one that would have to change the chemicals daily, you know, in the dark room. And I really got to like the smell, the process, mm-hmm. you know, that discovery when you put your film in and or your paper in the developer and that image, you know, just sort of appears. There's some sort of magic to that I miss, you know, with photography, printing your own, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And I would say that that it's kind of a misnomer that digital is less of a process, that printing digitally is less of a process, that you even waste less paper than you did in the darkroom. It's like absolutely not true.
Huh, interesting.
It's definitely like just as particular and just as much fine tuning without toxic chemistry. So I'm excited about that.
And the other thing is, too, you know, in the enlarger, you would have the different lenses. You know, you would have, oh, my gosh, the fisheye lens or the lens that, look at Gerald laughing at me. No, I'm just playing with you. You know, and there were so many different lenses that you could use and, you know, dodge and burn and that sort of thing. I mean, it's really old school stuff, but effective.
Yeah, definitely. And it's still like a rich place for experimentation and things like that. Like I learned color in a color darkroom, and those chemicals are so incredibly toxic that I'm just like thankful we don't have to put kids around that anymore.
Well, that's why I got a third eye up here, because, you know, all the chemicals. But is there anything that we've left out that you want to talk about that, you know, I could ask you about the Swiss Institute, what that commission was about?
Yeah, so what was really interesting to me about this commission through the Swiss Institute is they were looking really specifically for artists that had a connection to Kansas City, because the work in the commission was going to be placed in an office space in Kansas City. So Swiss Re is like a local insurance company for insurance companies, okay. And the Swiss Institute curates their corporate collection. So they found my work at the Flat File show at the H&R Block Art Space, which is like over 200 portfolios. So the fact that...
It is amazing. I love that Flat File. I really do.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite shows to see what all your peers are making. But the fact that they had found my portfolio out of all of the work in there is kind of amazing in and of itself. But I was able to produce 15 works for their space, in their office space, to bring a whole lot of color into, you know, an office space. Place where people have to spend a lot of their life, you know, at work.
Thank God we don't have to.
Yeah.
You know, but I shouldn't say that, but I did. You know, I've died behind, you know, the corporate walls and, you know, 9 to 5 and that sort of thing. So, you know, we're happy that you're here, Megan.
Yeah, thank you.
And again, share your website with us and any other sort of social media platforms that you're at.
Yeah, I might also share that the drugstore is having their kind of final kickoff.
Is that the end of this month?
It's at August 24th, so that's a Saturday.
Okay.
And 12 to 4 is going to be like a big studio sale, garage sale, where you can get great deal on art or art supplies. Mm-hmm. And then the evening, 9 until late, very late, is going to be just a big party, a big dance party in there. So a little bit of celebration amidst all the chaos we have going on.
Yeah. Well, I wish you a good year at the Art Institute, and I'm happy to talk with you anytime. Doors open.
Yeah, thank you.
You bet. Hey, we're going to be right back with ArtSpeak Radio after these messages.
Missouri's motto is, let the welfare of the people be the supreme law, but the legislature still hasn't passed Medicaid expansion. This week on the Heartland Labor Forum, we'll talk to Jobs with Justices Richard Von Glahn on a new coalition to use the initiative process to win health care coverage for thousands of Missourians. Then, we'll find out from Art Johnson, former president of the Social Security Local in Kansas City, just how bad Trump's union busting of federal unions is. Find out Thursday at 6 p.m., rebroadcast Friday, 5 a.m.
Tell your smart speaker, play KKFI, and enjoy the programming you love. KKFI can be wherever you are.
This is ArtSpeak Radio, and I'm Maria Vasquez-Boyd. We're happy to have you along this Wednesday. And, up next we have artist, writer, or copywriter, digital marketing guru, Larissa, are you ready? And, you know, I'm real excited that you're here with us, Larissa, because there's so much to talk about. We're going to talk about the Gallery of Lost Things, which is an interactive 3D exhibition. Although this morning you told me it was just a little bit scaled down at the Arts Asylum, but I want to say welcome to you.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
You bet. So let's talk about Gallery of Lost Things. You're transforming the Arts Asylum into sort of a journey, an interactive journey, right?
Yeah, so the show actually started at a gallery called New Element, and that show actually just recently came down. But then at the Arts Asylum, which is also where my studio is, I was asked to be the tenant spotlight artist there, and so I took the opportunity to take the literal artist showcase that we have access to and sort of turn it into a little mini version. So it's by no means as expansive, but it is still open and available. You can kind of get a taste of it. Mm-hmm. And then I'm just currently in the works of looking for kind of the next big home for the rest of the work to go up and see kind of what it's going to evolve into.
But in this journey that a Gallery of Lost Things, you're asking a question, poses the question, what would life be like without?
Yeah, so I got started thinking about what we do as people when things disappear, right? So whether that is people or mundane objects or like whatever, right? And so we tend to build museums in their honor as opposed to taking like a proactive step to do something about the fact that they're disappearing, right? So mm-hmm. just even listening to the loss that Kansas City is going through right now mm-hmm. of art space and all this, like what is our reaction as a city or as a culture going to be, right? Are we going to mm-hmm. let it happen? You know, what are we going to do, right? Are we going to put a plaque up and say, oh, it was so nice that we used to have artists mm-hmm. in this town, mm-hmm. right? I mean, mm-hmm. it's kind of a funny thing. And so I started thinking about that. A big part of my sort of worry, I guess, gets tied up in the environment and in sort of the loss that I see around us. And I think it's really ironic that as a culture, we love to put natural icons all over our stuff, right? So we love like pillows with pine cones on them and little foxes and forests mm-hmm. and whatever. But all that stuff is only relevant because we have them in our lives right now, right? Mm-hmm. Like because mm-hmm. those places exist and they remind us of something. Mm-hmm. And so if you sort of take, you know, a really, you know, futuristic, arguably dystopic view, what happens if those things disappear, right? Well, those icons lose their relevancy, and what is our reaction going to be to that, right? So I started off making these sort of funny replicas of pine cones and the bumblebee and coral and things that we know are disappearing right now as a means to bring them to people's attention, but in a way that is a little bit less literal, in a way that sort of speaks to that, like, you know, we're going to build a monument to this thing as opposed to, like, doing something about the fact that the actual element might be gone.
You know, and in this description also, you're asking about everyday things that are in our lives that we take for granted, but it also asks people to think about the role that they're playing in those objects taken for granted. It asks people to think about the role they're playing in that object's demise. What could they have done? What will they do to save it? I mean, those are very provocative, very good questions to ask viewers.
I think we have a responsibility, right? I mean, we drive over things, we pass things every day, and, you know, so my intent, and I've said from the beginning, and I sort of get laughed at, you know, my intent was not to, like, come in here and be this harbinger of fear and be like, everything's going away, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's not the point, because mm-hmm. that's not helpful. And so really more what I'm hoping people get out of seeing something like this is saying, you know, even if it's just to take the time to stop and notice, right, a little bit more and be a little bit more aware of your surroundings and a little bit more aware of the steps that you take, the things that we do just sort of do by habit. You know, and I think if you can stop for a couple of seconds in your day-to-day life and say, like, is this the best I can do in mm-hmm. this moment, right, mm-hmm. then, I mean, it can change you, right? And it doesn't, you know, it's not a monumental change. It's not a universal change, right? That kind of stuff is not, you know, it doesn't take money or effort, really. It just takes a certain level of awareness, I think. And so if we can do that as a society and as individuals, I think we'll see, you know, that there is a possibility.
So the experience is intended to make global issues personal. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah.
And I love that you say that if the exhibit, excuse me, I'm new to English. If it motivates one person to become a part of the solution, then that's pleasing to you. And so that's sort of your, would you want to happen, the experience that you want to have? happening.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you know, it's always kind of that comes down to, you know, if one person is impacted by this thing, but I think it really is true, right? You know, if 100 people come through that space, you know, and one person walks away feeling a little bit more like, oh, maybe I do have a choice in this, right? Or maybe I can take this global thing, right, this issue, and I can cut away the noise, and I can say, okay, I can't fix all of it, but I can take one small step, right? Then I think that that's, you know, I think that's the role of art, right? And I think that's the role of artists. You know, my big vision would be to have this show, like, travel, right? I would love to see it in different cities and have it, you know, pull in different elements from those different environments, you know, and sort of become a part of that space, right? And bring it down to that local level where people can relate with it no matter where it is or how it is displayed, so...
And for our listeners, I'm talking to Larissa. You ready? We're talking about the Gallery of Lost Things, which is at the Arts Asylum, 1000 East 9th Street in Kansas City, Missouri. So it's a showcase. It's a smaller, a scaled-down version of the exhibit that was up earlier, but there's also a book that accompanies this exhibition, Gallery of Lost Things. So the show is up currently till, we're not sure.
The end of August, yeah. Okay. You'll be able to see the tenant spotlight piece of that through the end of August, and then hopefully I'll find a new venue, and we'll go from there.
Well, you know, we're going to take a real quick break because we have to play take two, and then we'll be back talking with Larissa. You ready? Hang in there.
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons.
And I'm Susan Sanders.
And this is Take Two, two takes in a movie currently playing in the Kansas City area. And today the topic is a comic drama based on a true story and is called The Farewell.
This film by Lulu Wang is a true story based on an actual lie. It's from China, and it has to do with how the Chinese handle the impending death of a beloved family member who has a fatal disease.
Yes, Awkwafina, who we all remember from Crazy Rich Asians, plays the lead role of a woman who's actually an American who travels to China when she finds out that her beloved grandmother is terminally ill. And the ethical problem is, what do you do? Do you tell her the truth, or do you put on a fake wedding to make her feel better?
Yes, and it's fascinating to hear them compare the differences between Eastern culture and Western culture. In the Eastern culture, they believe that the family should carry the burden of knowing what's happening, and they don't tell. And in the Western culture, there's a sense that you ought to tell the person. And so it makes an audience viewer wonder, what would I prefer, to know or not?
Right. You know, this is a very sweet-natured movie. I think this is an easy one to recommend to just about anybody.
Oh, yes.
It's there's no objectionable material. The only downside would be for those people who don't like subtitles, because at least half this movie is in Chinese with subtitles.
But you know what? I found after about 1 minute, I was totally absorbed into the story, and I don't think the subtitles will present an obstacle to enjoying and appreciating this film.
It's alternately funny and poignant, and it's a wistful crowd pleaser. I'm Russ Simmons.
And I'm Susan Sanders.
And this is Take Two.
This is Maria Vasquez Boyd. This is 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, and you're listening to Art Speak. So we're gonna talk again with Larissa Uretti, who is an award-winning and internationally recognized fiber and mixed media artist. She has exhibited regionally and internationally, and has won several artist residencies in Spain, Estonia, Italy, and beyond. Now, when she's not out mountain biking or exploring this wide world, you can find her in her studio making a mess with paint, dyes, and a myriad of other mediums. She writes about her adventures locally and abroad, and is always up for swapping stories. I like that. I like that. So welcome, my friend.
Thanks.
You know, at the break, we were talking a little bit more about the Gallery of Lost Things. So what are some of the objects we'll find in the exhibit?
So it started with a pine cone. So there is a hand needle felted pine cone that is sort of, at least in my mind, the mascot of the show. And then I went on to create, there's a honeybee, there's a coral, like hyperbolic geometry crochet piece that's meant to replicate coral. there is, I made a pretty cool whale that turned out really great. He was sort of a good idea in the 11th hour, so to speak, that came through. And then when it was up, when it has a home in a full gallery, there's actually like monarchs and butterfly pieces and elements that kind of hang from the ceiling and you can sort of walk amongst. Mm-hmm. Currently, there is also a... I went through sort of a list of sort of the North American, like, common, just sort of ugly little gray birds that are on the endangered species list, and I found a really sweet version of that I created that is currently on display that's probably one of my favorite pieces in the whole show that came together. So
are these at scale, or are they a little bit larger in life? Or
so the pine cone is... They're pretty much to scale. Okay. I mean, they're reasonable. The bird is a little bit miniature, but yeah, ultimately I did sort of aim for realism. The whale is not to scale.
Right. What is the medium in each of these?
So the show is a combination of needle felting, which is a process that's done by taking raw wool roving and then crafting it into 3D shapes using very tiny, sharp, barbed needles. And then hand-dyed silk. So I start with just like a white bolt of regular old fabric, and I strip it down, prepare it for dyeing, and then can apply colors and paints and different things. And then in its full scale, there was actually like charcoal drawings done on the wall that were temporary and meant to then be washed off. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I mean, at one point I hauled in like tree bark and installed that, you know, so sort of mixing like actual natural elements with sort of their facsimiles. So just a lot of different, you know, that's the mixed media part for sure coming through.
And because this is scaled down at the Arts Asylum, 1000 East 9th Street, Kansas City, Missouri, you're looking for another venue that, do you think you could even gain more objects in a larger space?
Absolutely.
And really keep this going?
Yeah, the original vision for this show is quite large. And that is something that, you know, when I was initially looking at space, yes, so it would not be a real struggle, I think, for me to produce something that would take over a much larger venue. Mm-hmm. Just because, like, you know, it's sort of my first foray into installation work, but it's something that has been in my head for so long at this point that it's almost done, you know? Yeah. And so now it's just a matter of making it and finding the right place to stage it.
You know, if you would share any of your information, website or social media platform with our listeners, they, I'm sure, could... see the work online and maybe sort of gain some interest in it, because it's really a wonderful interactive gallery of lost things that is a wonderful exhibition for you.
So you can head over to my website, which is unraveledonline.com, and unraveled has two L's in it. And then you can also find me on Instagram at unraveled_KC, and then Facebook by the same name. It's Unraveled LLC. There's just like some different snapshots. I'm working on a time-lapse video that I shot that shows how the work was coming up together. So that's not quite done yet, but it will be dropping on social and on my site. Just so you can kind of see the creation of the Gallery of Lost Things and what it takes to do something like that. So you can find me.
Will the art Asylum have a first Friday for your gallery?
Not officially. If we can work out something down the road. Okay. I mean, as it is right now, the Arts Asylum does have like public hours, so you can just go in and you know, check it out. There's 22 working studios in that building, and you know, not everyone is there all the time, but we do events. They do pop-up events and stuff, and you can learn more about their stuff on artasylum.org.
Terrific. Is there anything that we left out that you want to mention, Larissa?
I don't think so. I think we're good.
Terrific. You know, I want to thank you so much. And it was great meeting you. And, of course, you know, you're welcome back. My door is open all the time. Well, this door, not the one at home.
Right.
But at any rate, we're going to take a real quick break, and then we're going to be back with Austin Woodrell.
Support for KKFI provided by the 40th Annual Ethnic Enrichment Festival, Friday through Sunday, August 16th, 17th, and 18th in Swope Park, featuring food, music, dance, and crafts from more than 65 countries, as well as cultural information and hands-on activities for the kids. That's the 40th Annual Ethnic Enrichment Festival, Friday through Sunday, August 16th, 17th, and 18th in Swope Park. For details and the entertainment schedule, eeckc.org. That's eeckc.org.
Hello, this is Joseph Jackson, host of Cowtown Conversations, where we discuss matters that impact your life as a resident of the Kansas City metropolitan area. Thursday mornings at 9 a.m., right after Democracy Now! Tune in for our next episode as we continue our conversation about crime in Kansas City and the metropolitan area, and we'll be talking about domestic violence in Kansas City. So join us on Cowtown Conversations, Thursday mornings at 9 a.m., right after Democracy Now!
This is Maria Vasquez-Boy. This is Art Speak Radio on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Up next, we have Austin Madrell, who is an artist, woodworker, poet. Austin can be found busking in Westport or the Plaza when the mood strikes him, or obsessing over his latest project. His interests veer widely across media, from bone carving to leatherwork to graphic design and photography. He occasionally performs at the Brick or late night outside gas stations to receptive groups of people. I like that. He can be reached for questions, collaborations, or just a pleasant chat at austin.mudrell@gmail.com. Also, I want to mention he's a horse wrangler. Is that right?
Horse wrangler.
Yeah, I like that. Hello, Austin. Glad to have you on the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
You can pull that microphone up to you so that, yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, you don't have, terrific. So it's really exciting to meet you today. And in fact, all the my guests today I've not met before, and I don't think you know one another either. But this is good.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, this is what happens. So let's talk about your artwork, your poetry, what you do, and how you do it, and. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. You were talking about the East Crossroads earlier, and I moved to Kansas City 2 years ago and moved into the Wyandotte Films building where YJ's used to be,
sure.
Birdie's, Oracle, and I think that was a good introduction into like the community of Kansas City and just how I think mutually supportive and affirming that we can be. Because in some realms there is a lot of gatekeeping, but you have like Alessandra who runs Oracle and David Ford who's brilliant and the folks who run the Pearl and do like local theater. So you have all these different media and the same, I think a lot of the same work ethic or kind of the ethos or the passion transcribes whether you're doing sculpture or lingerie or bone carving or theater or skits, you know.
Yeah, this is a very generous community of artists and creative people that really do support one another. You know, it's like a big family. Sometimes you have the falling out and that sort of thing. But overall, I think it's a pretty well-knit family of creative people. So, are you originally from Kansas City?
Yeah, I grew up in Independence. I went up to school in Maryville.
Okay.
And recently I was at Arts Bar, rest in peace, and my old life drawing teacher was down there with his kids who are from Germany, and it turns out he only gets to see them once, like every 2 years, teaches in Maryville. But it was just very interesting to see kind of that generational gap, you know, because he's been coming to Kansas City and the art scene in St. Joseph, you know, long before any of that existed. So, you know, he just has such a different perspective on it than somebody who's just stepped in and it's like, you know, this is amazing.
Yeah, but, you know, I think people can fairly easily adjust to being in this new. If they're new to the city, they can adjust easily into the art scene. I think that's one thing that I've heard from other people outside of Kansas City that come in and live here.
Well, and Kansas City's so funny because like it's such a crossroads. Like there's just a little bit of everything. Like there's weird Patti Smith type like spoken word going on, and then like the great great grandchildren of the Clash type punk. But then we have like narrative hip hop and things that definitely pay homage to like conscious rap, you know. And it's all there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you brought some work for us today to read some of your poetry.
Now, let's get political.
Yeah, you know, and I know that we had talked about perhaps you performing live, and somehow that didn't happen, but that's okay. You had some sort of a horse thing.
Yeah. Oh, can I tell that story?
Oh, absolutely.
It's an interesting, it's a funny story. We had, I work at Jerusalem Cafe, and one of our cooks' name is Jose, and Jose's fantastic, and him and I will have these broken conversations in Spanglish, but he's just like a charm, you know. And he'll pull up pictures of his family from Guatemala, and they'll say, hey, but we got this horse named Jose. So I sent back, you know, all my coworkers. I'm still working with Jose. So it turns out the horse Jose has cancer. So I've always been really interested in narrative storytelling, like Kris Kristofferson, you know, like, Jesus was a Capricorn, he had lots of funky friends, or like Johnny Cash. And I think that I was raised by, like, you know, farmers, and then I got really into, like, rap as a storytelling vehicle, and I noticed all these similar characterizations between how Johnny Cash would tell a story about some boy who goes off to war and comes back versus how, somebody really twisted, like Watsky, you know, we'll just have these very tightly packed narratives over 3 minutes. So I like this idea of writing a story about Jose, the cancer horse, and taking him on, like, one last ride. You know, because horses are these, like, noble, they're kind of paradoxes, aren't they? Because they're really fragile, and they've got these enormous, powerful, muscular bodies that are on these spindly little legs. And, like, they're enormously powerful, but also just one little thing goes wrong, and then it's all over. So I think horses are interesting that way.
You know, I don't have that much experience with horses, although when I had a studio at the Livestock Exchange Building, at that time they had stables, and so I would go out and visit the horses, and, you know, they're truly therapeutic in the sense that they can really calm a person. They kind of read people, much like other animals, like dogs.
Yeah, they're very empathetic.
Yeah.
I was on a flight from Mall of America to KCI, right as I found out that Artsport was closing, in fact. I'd, like, found out the day before, and sat next to a girl who, weirdly enough, her father works with my brother-in-law.
Wow.
And she was coming from horse therapy in Arizona. And this is long before I took the wrangling job. And, I mean, she just went on about, you know, just what a calming, kind of centering experience it was, because horses are, it's so much about body language and about social cues that it really, I think, manifests a more, like, self-aware conduct when you're around them. And I think that's a lot of a good thing for a lot of young children to learn as well. We would give rides to kids between the ages of anywhere from 8 to 18, probably. And I think the coolest part about, like, that learning experience wasn't even just, like, horsemanship, but also just, like, a certain degree of just, like, self-control.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, just even just the respect for something that's much larger that can be intimidating to one, right?
Yeah, we would always tell the kids, don't fight the horse, because he will win. He's got more muscles in his neck than you have in your entire body.
I just want to ask you really quickly, what brought you to horse wrangling before we get to your poem? Because I don't want to forget about
My friend Wyatt, I went to college with, approached me, and he's like, hey, I'd love to become a counselor, but I'm a wrangler right now. We need somebody to fill in the wrangler position. Would you like to come wrangle horses for a little bit so that I can move into out of this internship? And I'm like, yeah, sure. So I called my manager, and I asked if I could have, like, 2 months off. And he's like, yeah, sure. And then I went and wrangled horses.
I like that story. I like that.
It was very spontaneous.
Did you find it difficult at first, or was it just something like, gee, I can do this? I just felt really comfortable or natural to you?
It was in a ministry setting. I grew up in doing a lot of ministry and volunteer work. I wanted ministry to be a platform for theological dialogue that it is not designed to be. So I stepped away from it because building houses with Habitat for Humanity is not the best place to have, like, debates about, like, the legitimacy of the Bible.
Yeah. There you go.
So I stepped back into it, and it was interesting because you always have those people who have those questions and are ready to have those dialogues, but it's not the main goal, you know?
Gotcha. And you want to read your poetry?
Sure. I think that the whole conversation is kind of like a political stance, just as far as, like, the evolution of cities. And I'm very interested in, like, the evolution of culture and how we communicate with one another. And also, like, empowerment, like, personal empowerment, understanding that, like, if you participate, you can change things. Like, mobilizing ideas. So I call this PSA, PSA 1, because there will probably be more. Passive teenagers scroll through YouTube React videos, tapping like, subscribe, and harassing Fortnite streamers with poop emoticons. Meanwhile, corporations masquerade as Twitter accounts as a PR stunt to seem hip and personable. After 90 days, you're eligible for insurance through your employer, but it's snatched away the minute you need it. Large manufacturing companies institute a 9-month layoff and rehire schedule to keep overhead low. You're notified in the coming fiscal year your premium will go up 10%. You are being preyed upon by the very institutions put in place to ensure your well-being. The wheel of capitalism rolls labor out to Mexico. Flimsy nationalist agendas teach you to fear the effects of immigration on the employability of the middle class, while backroom deals exploit cheap foreign labor. At the end of the year, state wage and employment statistics will paint a dishonest, optimistic picture in red, white, and blue ink. Your every move is surveilled by cameras that grow increasingly smaller and more unobtrusive, renewing the illusion of privacy. Your phone is polite enough to ask permission to record audio before using your conversations for targeted marketing campaigns. Confidentiality is quietly disposed of, no fuss, in the name of national security. Large men with empty eyes rolled into the dumpster out back, where it rests, next to other outmoded concepts, like annual bonuses, social mobility, and access to public office. In some corner of the world thousands of miles away from the nearest cappuccino, far removed from your safe world of internet cafes, public Wi-Fi, and AirPods, bombs with the American flag painted on their sides are dropped on the religious institutions of brown people. Fox News fashion segment tells you the low ponytail is in this year. America's light fades in the West as the infrastructure of India and China take the world stage. But you can have soft-baked cookies delivered to your door by stressed-out college students at 2 in the morning. Shrieking liberals hold manicured nails shaking trigger-happy over buzzwords like body shaming and inherited privilege, paranoid, limited in ambition, and mindless of large-scale socioeconomic reform. Bull-necked conservatives crouch toad-like in their VA halls and at their Thanksgiving tables and complain about how the world is getting away from them. They speak about things they don't understand and ferment a moonshine brew of silence culture that is anti-intellectual and therefore anti-proletariat. Between the two of them, media outlets scream at you, demanding you pick a side. Preening silicone mannequins strut under spotlights, waging war on age with an arsenal of microblade procedures, hormone therapies, and more charcoal scrub than you could shake a bundle of kindling at. They assault the gates of Father Time, begging for more. Why must beauty fade so soon? The radio announcer's voice tells you of the difficulty of identifying military targets in civilian centers. Food subscription services pop up like daisies, delivering pre-portioned meals to your doorstep to suit your on-the-go lifestyle. Ebola sweeps across Africa like a broom, claiming lives like dust bunnies. Energy drink companies step up production to keep up with the rising demands of capitalism on the working class, wrapping goring concoctions in bright colors to fool you into thinking it was your idea all along. You fall asleep with Netflix going on in the background. Local elections were last Tuesday. Voter turnout was 16%.
Beautiful. That was Austin Madrell, artist, woodworker, poet, and, you know, I want to ask you, as part of your performances at the Brick, do you also incorporate some of your poetry as part of your performance on stage? Or is it strictly musical?
Oh no, it's mostly poetry. I only very recently got into music. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I can absolutely see a part one, part two, part three, and so on. And
just
so
continue
on.
To rant well, about yeah, all the things yeah. in society that make me yeah. sad.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's a day in the life, almost really. You know, of everything that you mentioned, because we're so bombarded by so much information, misinformation, and opinions and. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I think that bipartisanship is, it doesn't matter what your ideology is or what your ideas are, really. It's more how you communicate those ideas. I think that what we're lacking is just dialogue, mm-hmm. is just respectful exchange yeah. of ideas. Yeah. I don't care if I disagree with you, yeah. but we can sit down and discuss it, you know, like adults, like let's go get coffee. But I think that people feel disempowered, and I think that there is an element of like conflict that is present in the idea of just like debate that doesn't need to be there.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And you know what? I'm going to bring in Megan and Larissa in on this too, because you know you see a lot of that, unfortunately, on Facebook, and I know it's not the end all and all that, but you know there's so much political rhetoric on Facebook that. You know, sometimes most times it's not even worth it, you know, but just to have a simple civil discussion face to face, I think that we lack that sometimes, don't you think? Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's, I think it's a real issue, and there's some really interesting sort of big nonprofits in the world right now that are digging into some of that more political data on social media and trying to see how it's being leveraged against us. And I'm not even talking about like the big wigs. I'm not talking about like, you know, there's a company in based out of California called Tech for Campaigns that is spending a lot of time trying to evaluate, you know, what does the ad spend look like? What does the data usage look like on both sides of this imaginary line, right, between political parties? And what do we do about that? And how do we, how does that form what we think mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. stuff, right? And how does that sort of build walls between groups of people that maybe don't need to, right, that could actually just sit down and have a conversation, you know, with all of their experience and their diverse backgrounds and their opinions about things.
I don't know if anybody's watched the new Cambridge Analytica documentary, but it says a lot of interesting things about, like, suggestibility and working with basically the margins mm-hmm. of, like, swing voters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think there's also something to be said. Like, I think what I do has a lot to do with advertising, with ad photography, and I think that there's also this, like, lack of understanding about not only how advertising works on us as consumers, like, as humans, but how those algorithms are working on us, too, and, making these problems worse at the way that we discuss things, but also making us less aware of how they're working on us all the time.
Yeah, I mean, a large part of what I do in my, like, you know, one of my jobs, right, is work in digital marketing, and it is a really fascinating landscape. And on one side, it's interesting. It's like anything, right? It's like social media and all this. You know, it's easy to look at it and say, like, wow, this is the, you know, this is the rot that is going to undo society. And on the other hand, it's like, but there, you know, there's, like most things, two things can be true, right, mm-hmm, at the same mm-hmm, time. Mm-hmm. And so it is this, like, really powerful tool, and it's a really cool way that, like, sort of to your point about the democracy of photography, like, you know, what this has done in a lot of ways is it's given everyone basically a level playing field in a lot of ways, right, to say, like, if you can create hype and buzz, like, you can get to people, right, which is why things like net neutrality and all that are so important, right, and why that stuff matters, because you want everyone to be able to come to the table and have a voice. Now, obviously, those systems become monopolized, and there are a lot of, there's a lot of hoops to jump through, but, you know, at the end of the day, it is this sort of a blessing and a curse, and how do we, as consumers play into it, but then also how do we, as people who have things to say, like, how do we utilize that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Austin?
I was just absorbing that. I think that was remarkably well said. I was just, that prompted a number of thoughts.
Well, and I know Austin is currently working on a manuscript. So is this something, some information here that might find their way into your work?
Yeah, I've been interested in the zine that I'm working on right now. I'm interested in crossing the boundaries between experiential, photographic, and text-based art. Uh-huh. So I'm beginning to pair poems with photographs that I took on different trips or hikes or adventures, and then pairing a piece of poetry or a verse that was inspired by that same mm-hmm. Experience. We were talking about this a little bit before, but the format of putting, you know, the context of a painting next to it, and like in a gallery, mm-hmm. is always so interesting to me because you get a glimpse into the artist's logic. So I've almost been toying with like this two-tiered. It's almost meta, you know, art that talks about art, and to have a bit of a contextualizing paragraph next to each one. And I'm not sure if that's an idea that I'm married to, but it's just sort of marinating in lots of different scripts.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're thinking about the possibilities.
Yeah, I have a table back home that's just covered in stacks of paper.
I can imagine. So, you know, I'm happy that you all were able to meet here today. I don't think you've known each other previously, but, you know, this is one of the things, again, we talk about Kansas City, that so generous and all that. When you meet someone, especially, you know, out in the community, in the galleries or on the streets or, you know, in a conversation about art, a lot of possibilities form, collaborations, and, you know, hey, let's exchange information. And I think this is true of what's happened today because, you know, of the work that each of you do. And it's kind of exciting to introduce each other. Yeah. So there you go.
I'm taking notes on all of the things that you guys are talking about.
He really was. He was taking notes during all the the interviews, and that's okay. Yeah. Any final words from you all? Because we're going to close up here and get to the next program. Only because I'm only here till one, and we got to make room for Jeff Alfonso Conway Harshberger. No, that's not really his name. Jeff Harshberger is going to show up next with Jazz in the Afternoon at 1 to 3. So any final words that you all want to mention on air or any upcoming things going on?
Be excellent to one another.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's important that I think the ways Kansas City can take the opportunity to break down sort of the silos between us, right? So I'm really excited to meet you two, and I'd love to talk more after and just see, we have so many cool, powerful things happening in this city on so many levels. And so get out and explore, find those niche markets and become aware of what we're all doing, because we all have stuff.
Embrace your agency.
There you go.
Austin, you're on Instagram.
Stead, Scald, Stand, with underscores between all of those. Stead, underscore, Scald, underscore, Stand.
Megan, Larissa?
Yeah, it's just my name on Instagram. It's MEGANPOVYWAJLO.
And I am unraveled underscore KC with two L's in unraveled, please.
I like that. Thank you all so much for showing up today. We love that. So that's our show for today. Next week, August 21st, we're halfway through August, thank God, because there's only like 79 days till Halloween, my favorite. Next week, Jane Gotch will be with us, dancer, choreographer Jane Gotch. She moved last year to Toronto, but she's here in town to talk about a project that she's working with working on. Also, the East Side People's Cultural Center. They'll be here talking about what's going on with the center. Stay tuned again for my beautiful friend, Jeff Harshberger. And, thank you so much for tuning in today. You can find us on kkfi.org or podcast or subscribe through iTunes. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I want to go out with a song for my father, which is his birthday. It would have been 92. And, who doesn't love Duke Ellington? Thanks so much for listening, honey. I'm coming home.